On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the film Trading Places. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, but if you do listen without having seen it, just be aware that the plot of the film will be spoiled for you. Enjoy.
Hey, jingity-jing, it's Dominic the Donkey. Jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La, 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 la.
Now I'm recording, so that means now we have to do all that again.
We just found the meaning of
life.
So
take it again from the top. Sing, motherfucker.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Nice. And what time is that?
It's big boys time. It's the best time of every year.
It's big boys time. Oh, now I've gone off script. our highly polished and scripted show. I've ruined it.
I'm now flipping through the pages thinking, oh God, where's it going? What's happening here?
Yeah, so on page 72, you'll see that I gave you a little note there on your thing just to, you know, spice up your delivery. It's a drawing of a penis.
I see. Yeah. My favorite thing is, have you seen Dick Butt?
Yes.
Yeah.
Who came up with that?
I think it was some random cartoonist, wasn't it?
I do believe so, yeah.
So whenever someone looks at something shocking on a piece of paper, in a movie or in a TV show or whatever, I always think they're just looking at Dick Butt, just a surprise Dick Butt.
Yeah, which is fine, because even though it's a little bit rude, it's still kind of wholesome, isn't it? Compared to most of what's out there on the internet in terms of what they could be looking at. It could be, you know, the announcement that Boris Johnson's become Prime Minister, or Pepe the Frog or something, you know.
Yeah, it's an innocent thing, Dick Butt.
All things that I hope will be left behind as we enter a new decade.
Yeah, we're entering the future. It feels like it's the future, doesn't it?
It does.
2020.
We've already gone past a lot of things where it's like, oh, that's the year it was in that movie. Can you believe it? Is there anything that's set in the, like, 2020s? Any films?
Yeah, there must be. But we've just passed Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm sure there's bound to be.
Soylent Green, when's that set?
1992.
Oh, God damn it.
I don't know, possibly.
I've never seen it, I just know about it from The Simpsons.
Soylent Green,
which I'm sure
good,
is probably
actually,
like 90% of people's experience.
Soylent Green's actually quite a good film.
2022, I wasn't far off.
Yeah, 2022. We still got 2 years to turn it into a reality.
In the year 2022, the cumulative effects of overpopulation, pollution, and the associated effects of global warming have caused severe worldwide shortages of food, water, and housing.
Well, that definitely sounds like it could happen.
Yeah.
Although we're more likely to go. Have you seen Snowpiercer?
No, I know of it.
Would you like me to...
I mean, man, Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah. Would you like me to spoil a tiny element of it?
Yes, sure. Why not?
So all of the lower class people on the train, they get given these weird sort of like jellified cubes to eat. And it turns out that they've been just harvesting cockroaches. And it's just cockroach mulch.
How does it taste?
I imagine probably not too great, but, you know, a bit of spice. Put some smoked paprika on that cockroach. I bet it tastes great.
Yeah, exactly. It's not what you got. It's about how you use it.
Yes, exactly. So we do have Edge of Tomorrow, apparently, was set in 2020.
Okay. What's that? Is that like Edge of 17?
it's the one where you might have seen it and think, oh, that's a film called Live, Die, Repeat, because Live, Die, Repeat was always put much bigger in the marketing than Edge of Tomorrow.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing where they've got a really good slogan, but they think, oh, this slogan couldn't possibly work as the title for the film.
No. So, then 2021, we've got Johnny Mnemonic, which is a great movie. Have you ever seen that?
No.
It's an awesome cyberpunk movie based on a William Gibson story.
Oh, sweet.
At the end of that, spoiler alert, there's a hyper-intelligent dolphin.
It's not a spoiler as long as you don't say what the dolphin does.
No,
maybe it just hangs out.
It's super great. I really love that movie. It's got Dolph Lundgren being evil.
Dolphin Lundgren.
He is not a dolphin. But he's playing evil Jesus mercenary. He's a mercenary who thinks he's the second coming of Christ or something like that. It's great.
Not a mercenary of Jesus.
No, no. We also have A Quiet Place and Seeking a Friend for the End of the World in 2021.
That's a film we watched for this podcast.
It is. And then we've got The Purge movies, 2022, alongside Soylent Green. So in 2022, we'll either all be killing each other on one day of a year, or we'll be eating each other all the time and not knowing it. Oh God, is that a spoiler? Spoiler alert for Soylent Green.
God, I'll do it in my opening.
If you haven't watched Soylent Green by this point,
or if you somehow you've never seen the reference to it that was in The Simpsons,
it just got ruined for you. Soz guys.
Yeah, the spoiler is Soylent Green is an old professor man. He's made of soy.
Yeah, Soylent Green.
Yeah. So he's a soy boy.
In 2025, we have the incredible movie Time Cop 2.
Time Cop 2? I didn't know there was a Time Cop 1.
Have you never seen Time Cop?
No.
Time Cop?
Is it like RoboCop?
No, unfortunately not. Jean-Claude Van Damme is a cop and they have a time machine. And rather than using it to go back and solve crimes, so they don't go back and like punch Hitler in the balls or whatever, instead they chase after time thieves, so people who go back in time and alter events to get money and things like that. It's very, very stupid.
Who watches amazing. The Time Men?
Exactly. Exactly. Right. You know.
I see.
We have Children of Men in 2027. Then we have the 2014 version of RoboCop is apparently set in 2028.
Right.
Well done,
I haven't
guys.
Seen that. Is it rubbish?
I haven't either because it looked awful. And then...
Who was playing RoboCop? Probably Justin Bieber or someone.
It was... what's his name? He is in various things. He's actually quite good. He was in House of Cards...
I know that guy, Kevin Spacey.
It was not Kevin Spacey. Was his name Joel?
Terminator.
Joel Terminator. That's his name. Joel Kinnaman.
That's the guy.
Do you know Joel Kinnaman?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was RoboCop.
House of Cards was good. That's a series like with lots of episodes that's really long that I've actually seen.
Yes. Yeah. It was a very good show.
You know how I never have time to watch like actual long series or anything. I saw that one.
It's good. And then 2029, we'll finish it in 2029. We'll do the decade. That's when the Terminator takes place. So we'll look at future bits of the Terminator where they're running around in like horrible disaster landscape, getting killed by robots. That is 2029.
Sweet. That's actually not a bad decade of films, I guess.
Got some good stuff.
If this was
there.
A different kind of podcast, we could do that.
We could do film set in the future podcast. Or
that,
I mean,
that's actually not a bad concept.
If I was going for one of those, it would be films that were set in the future that are now set in the past.
Mm.
That's my niche, where it's like the year is 1999.
Yeah, the year is 2019. Like Let It Snow, which we just did last week.
Yeah, which is set in 1976, I believe.
Yep. Yep. That was the year that they had sexy rappers and waffle houses.
Yeah, that's
they
exactly
don't have those
right.
things anymore.
My favorite one of those things is Strange Days, which I don't... Have you ever seen Strange Days?
No.
It's this great cyberpunk thriller by Catherine Bigelow. Starring various amazing people, so Ralph Fiennes, Angela Bassett, Juliette Lewis, and it was made in 1995, set in 1999 at the turn of the millennium, and there's all sorts of crazy technology in it that they were just kind of expecting to appear in the next 4 years. and so it's this brilliant snapshot of what the not too distant future looked like as of the mid-90s, and it's got lots of sort of like VR technology and things like that. And it's great. It really encapsulates that era very well. And also has an amazing cover version of Hardly Wait by PJ Harvey, sung by Juliette Lewis, which is great. It's a really good film that's kind of, it slid under the radar at the time and has kind of become a cult classic now.
Yeah, I'm vaguely aware of it in that way. But I haven't seen anything, as you know.
You've seen nothing. But
no, I've never seen a film.
But have you seen Trading Places?
I have. That's a thing that I've seen.
That is good to
that
know.
I've watched.
Do you want to talk about it?
I do. Yeah. It's almost as if that's the reason that I called you.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. What a coincidence.
Yeah, it's a good film for this. So this is our last episode of the year, even though we're recording this on December 23rd, which is Christmas Eve Eve if you're an idiot, Festivus if you're not. So,
or December the 23rd if you're galaxy brained like me.
Have you been celebrating Festivus?
No.
No.
I don't know that is. What's Festivus?
You've never heard of Festivus?
No, it sounds like a horrible disease you catch by putting your balls in the mud.
Oh no, I've got Festivus.
I've got Festivus.
You used to get it after playing football every year.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Festivus.
Secular holiday celebrated on December 23rd and as an alternative to the pressures and commercialism of the Christmas season.
Yeah, that sounds like the kind of thing you could get behind, right?
What did I say to that?
Or have you've gone commercial?
Oh,
you're the man.
Christmas is too commercial now. It's too commercial. I'm going to go celebrate a secular holiday instead. Well,
Christmas
done.
Is a secular holiday. It's when all people come together to worship Jesus Christ. We've had this conversation.
That's exactly right.
No, it's from Seinfeld. And it was inspired by one of the writers who... Her family did actually used to have it and have all these like weird traditions that their dad made up.
So what you're saying is that people watched a TV show and were like, I like that idea. I'm going to go do it now.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. You know what?
Which is how he ended up with popular music.
You know what I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to not celebrate Festivus and forget it even exists by the time next year comes around.
Well, good, because one of the things Festivus is the Eric of grievances, and I've got a lot of grievances to talk to you about.
Do you? What are these grievances?
That you're always asking if I've seen films, and you know I haven't seen any films.
It's true. You're just ad-libbing all the way through every episode. You haven't watched
any of these. This is the big reveal. 134 episodes in. This is the big reveal. I'm bluffing. I'm making it all up. I've never seen a film.
One of these days you're going to get called out when I just say, so, Trading Places. It's interesting how they added that talking cat halfway through, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I loved it. That was the best bit. Yeah. I love talking cats.
But seriously, Trading Places.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. Did you?
It is good. It's good. And it's held up very well. So I haven't watched it in a few years now.
Me neither.
And it was nice to revisit it. And it is kind of Christmassy. There's a lot of Christmas elements to it. And in my research, I found out that actually it's become a Christmas Eve classic in Italy.
I heard it
gets shown in Italy on Christmas Eve every year, which I think is quite cute.
That's really cool. Yeah. And it is one of those ones that's starting to have that, as you say, it's got that cult classic status. It's starting to get shown in the cinemas around Christmas time, or, you know, the hip indie cinemas will show it.
Yeah, which is nice. So kudos to you, film.
Yeah, but I don't think it's one that you hear about that much, really. Even in the careers of Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, I think it's not as high up, as high billed as some of their other films, even though it's as good as any of them, I reckon.
Yeah, it's true. You think of it versus, you know,
Norbit.
Norbit or Pluto Nash.
Pluto Nash. I've still not. I really want to see that, actually.
I started watching it before I knew how notorious it was and thought, oh, this is quite bad, and turned it off. So I kind of want to revisit it just to, now that I know the context of how much it failed.
We'll get to it.
Yeah, just to see it. Because I love hokey, terrible sci-fi films.
After his successful nightclub is blown to flaming bits, Pluto and his band travel across the moon looking for clues, only to find out that the destruction of his club may have been his own fault.
Well, spoiler alert.
Yeah. This is on the Google listing. So it's a nightclub. There's two words.
Nightclub. You
compare budget, it to 100 million, box office 7.1 million.
Yeah, it did not do good. You compare it to like Beverly Hill Cop or The Nutty Professor or
even Coming to America, which was a few years later.
or Ghostbusters from Dan Aykroyd's perspective, or Blues Brothers. It's kind of slipped through the cracks a little bit, Trading Places. And there are some elements which are a little bit dodge. Which we'll probably get onto a little bit later. But overall, I think it holds up pretty well, and I think it's still.
But those elements don't. Well, they certainly didn't spoil it for me at all. It's a bit where, you know, you're able to watch a film and go, okay, this is from 1983. People thought it was acceptable to black up on film then. It's not acceptable anymore. It's fine. It's one scene. I can, you know, accept that that wouldn't be done now, and I don't think that that's okay. But I still really enjoy this film.
Yeah, it contextually, you know, this is quite a long time ago now, 1983. And you can understand, you know, the context then is very different to the context now. Not that it really makes it okay, but you can kind of understand it a bit more. It's not like, since we're still in the Christmas spirit, fuck Fairy Tale of New York and fuck its homophobic nonsense. That homophobic nonsense in that film, in that song.
That film? That famous film, that the famous Fairy Tale of New York.
Yeah.
A film in which Shane McGowan yells at a woman on the streets of New York for an hour. It's like a Christmas carol.
Yeah, but bad in every single
Irish
way.
Folk music.
Yeah, I hate that song and I hate the lyrics. And when people were like, oh, but it's fine for the time. It's like, no, it wasn't fine for the time.
Yeah, it was still didn't it come out like 1992 or something?
It was an incredibly offensive slur even for the time when it was released. So get out. And But what annoys me most about that is when people say, oh, well, you know, you have all these other people swearing and can't you just accept that it's a really good song? It's so much better than most of the rubbish that's on the radio. It's like, A, no, it's not. It's a piece of trash. B, it doesn't matter how good the song is. It could be the greatest song in the world. If you put in slurs in it, if you put in genuinely bigoted nonsense, it doesn't matter how great it is.
But the greatest song in the world is Tribute by Tenacious D, and there are no slurs in that.
Thing is, right, when they were singing Tribute, they're singing about the greatest song in the world, which they cannot remember. Which means it's not Fairy Tale of New York, because they would have been able to remember it. Ergo, not the greatest song in the world. Get out, you hacks. I don't trust anyone who says that that's their favourite Christmas song.
Yeah, yeah. If someone says that, they are probably a lad.
It's the music.
A lad is not restricted to a particular gender either.
It's the music equivalent of saying that Die Hard is a Christmas movie, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
It's kind of up there with the Darkness Christmas song in terms of, oh, this is the one that,
I don't mind that one.
It's the one that people who are a little bit risque think that they can get away with saying to be a little bit.
Yeah, but that's just got like a cheeky pun in it. That's not a slur.
No, but it's still sort of like, oh, this is a Christmas song for people who don't like Christmas songs. And that's where kind of Fairy Tale of New York sat at the beginning, is, you know, it was a very dark, a lyrically dark song about Christmas time, and I think it kind of tapped into that vein where people could like it even if they didn't like Last Christmas by Wham, for instance.
I don't dislike it as a narrative, you know. I think it's fine, and I do like the melody of it, as you say. It's just the cultural space that it occupies is just rotten,
it can go fuck itself. Genuinely go fuck it.
If you want a Christmas song with swearing, have you ever heard the song Fuck You If You Don't Like Christmas?
No, but I'm game for that.
It's by Crudbump, who is a rapper. He's very good. And it's a good song. I'll put it in the show notes.
The best Christmas song of all time is, of course, Dominic the Donkey. Have you ever heard Dominic the Donkey?
No, you just made that up.
Well, I'm telling you now, Paddy, that is going to be the intro music and outro music to this episode when you hear it. It's about Dominic.
Are you? Because when was the last time you edited the episode?
It was the 14th of never.
I'm gonna put the whole of the Fairy Tale of New York at the beginning and end of the episode, just to spite you.
No,
or just the offensive bit.
I'm telling you now, Paddy, you will listen to Dominic the Donkey and you will immediately realise, okay, this needs to be the song that plays all the time for every single episode ever. It's amazing. It's about the Italian Christmas donkey.
Okay.
It's sung by Lou Monte, who is... Do you know Lou Monte at all?
No.
He was a 1950s and 1960s... comedy singer. He was kind of the 1960s version of Weird Al Yankovic,
right?
Where he just sang Italian themed novelty records effectively. So all of them are. So...
Sorry, I just Googled it. I've got the lyrics open. It's really funny just to read it as if it's a poem. Hey, chingity-ching, hee-haw, hee-haw, it's Dominic the Donkey. Chingity-ching, hee-haw, hee-haw, the Italian Christmas Donkey. La-la-la-la, la-la-la-la, Lioda?
Yep.
L-A-E-O-H-D-A. That's a word, apparently.
It's definitely a word. Yeah, he...
Okay, this looks awesome. I'm very excited for this.
Yeah, you'll listen to it and you'll love it. And then you'll go, oh, I wonder what his other songs sound like. And you realise that all of them sound exactly the same, apart from they don't have bells going in the background.
you scroll down, you go, you've got those like incoherent Google questions that somehow come up because people have typed them, even though they don't know that you're not an idiot. People also ask, is Dominic the Donkey offensive?
So he is Italian-American, so I think it's probably okay.
I'm sure it's fine.
He also has such brilliant songs as Peppino the Italian Mouse.
Please, I see a theme developing here.
Peppino Svend Pasquale, the Italian Pussycat. Also, Please Mr. Columbus Turn the Ship Around.
Oh, that sounds like an interesting comment on colonialism.
Who Stole My Provolone? Hootenanny Italian Style.
Jules Holland's still fighting him about that one.
Goomba Custer's Last Stand.
Goomba?
Paul Revere's Horse. And Shudupiew Face.
Oh, what?
I don't know if that
did
was
he
the...
do the original Shudupiew Face?
I don't know if it was the original or not. When was Shudupiew Face released? No, so it was released in late 1980, so maybe he did a cover of it.
Right.
Like, very soon afterwards.
Cool.
But yeah, so so what a esteemed career of our man Lou Monte.
Wow.
But Lou Monte, this is an incredible diversion.
His real name is David Lou Monte.
But... That is a deep cut there, Paddy.
That's a niche reference.
Incredibly niche. But yeah, he does not appear in the film Trading Places, unfortunately.
No, he does not.
As much as he should. But the cast in this are great. So, you know, you've got obviously Aykroyd and Murphy who work very well together. They've got a real sort of chemistry, a really good vibe going on in this movie.
When they both sort of start working together, they have the realization that they've been played by the two old rich men, and then they start working together. That's like, yes, you're like, yes, come on. Yes, you guys, you can do it. Yeah, you make a great team.
Yeah, it's brilliant. But then you've got Jamie Lee Curtis as well. Have I told you how much I love Jamie Lee Curtis?
You have, yeah. She's great. And I read that this is one of her first films outside of horror, where she'd been very much kind of typecast and been wanting to sort of break away from it, and they took a chance on her, and I think it paid off, because she's great.
Yeah, it is. It's really good. And yeah, she had been in things like The Fog, Halloween, Halloween 2, of course. But then, yeah, she got this breakout in Trading Places, where she could really show her comedic skills. And I think even now, people don't recognise how good Jamie Lee Curtis is at comedy. Which is something that she's got better and better at over time. So I don't know if you saw Scream Queens on TV the other year.
No.
It's one of the funniest shows I've ever seen in my life. It's a horror comedy from the people behind American Horror Story.
I think I saw a trailer for it and thought it looked quite good.
And it's effectively a send-up of slasher movies, the first series in particular. The second series didn't do very well, and they never showed all of it in the UK, unfortunately. They just showed a couple of episodes. But yes, it's this very, very funny horror comedy about this serial killer at a American college, and Jamie Lee Curtis plays the dean and is just so funny in it. Recently, she was also incredible in Knives Out. I don't know if you saw Knives Out.
No, again, I think it looks really good, and it's got really good reviews.
Yeah, it's probably the best film I've seen all year. It's so good. So I highly recommend, you know, you might not get a chance to see it at the cinema, but I recommend you watch it when it comes to streaming services or whatever.
Apparently, it's worth it just for Daniel Craig's accent.
He's amazing. He's got this great, like, Kentucky accent. It's brilliant. And yeah, it's well worth a watch. A very funny, very clever film, incredibly well directed. And I'll talk more about it in the next episode where we talk about our next movie.
And we'll be talking about things that are on in the cinema now.
Yeah, I
know. Current right? films.
What's all that about?
A current film.
What's all that about? But yeah, Knives Out is great. And Jamie Lee Curtis is amazing in that. But she's very funny in this. And I think kind of also provides a heart to this movie. And is like one of the only people in this film who has a sense of decency, I suppose.
Yeah, because she takes him in when he's really down on his luck, and she has no reason to do so or to believe him about the fact that he's a rich guy and all his credit cards have stopped working, and he's like literally on his knees, and he's like walking towards her still on his knees, which is really funny. And she's just like, oh yeah, okay, you can come and like live with me while you get back on your feet. And she has no reason to do that, and she sort of nurses him to health in a really tender way. The sort of incongruously tender, but it works really well against the backdrop of all the horrible old men who are playing the situation just for laughs, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It does provide this kind of grounding to the film that otherwise it might get a little bit too farcical, I suppose.
Yeah, it would just be too much like relentless bad things happening, bad things happening, bad things happening to him. So even though it is like loads of bad things happening to him over and over, it doesn't feel that way because she's there tempering it.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
And it's intercut with scenes of, you know, Eddie Murphy learning how to become a rich man and going, hey, when I was a kid, if we wanted a jacuzzi, we had to fart in the tub. Which is a great line.
Which is a great line.
That's a classic Eddie Murphy kind of line, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's loads of brilliant dialogue in this film. There's loads of really good little witty one-liners.
You know, vulgar, but still funny.
Yes, yeah. Which is what you want. And that's the kind of humour that really worked incredibly well in the 80s as well. Is that kind of stuff, which you don't really see that kind of stuff now.
I tried to make that joke earlier today and no one was having it.
Was it just because you were telling Eric?
Yeah. He was also asleep.
An asleep baby, and even then he still groaned at it.
Yeah, he just went...
But yeah, it's
I think it's kind of low-key funny as well. There aren't that many laugh-out-loud moments, are there? But genuinely, most scenes are very, very funny, and it really keeps the humour ticking along in a way that a lot of films from that era do. And films that are just solid and have a really, really good, solid comic story. That's, you know, it's a classic narrative, isn't it? It's like The Prince and the Pauper or A Christmas Carol or any of those kind of stories where it's a rags to riches thing or people have to confront their sins or whatever. But it manages to present it in a way that never feels tropey or derivative. And it flows really solidly.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right, it manages to maintain that air of humour all the way through, which is something that's so rare that kind of it understands and it gets the viewer involved in that humorous atmosphere and slowly ramps it up all the way through to the end. So you've got those scenes that border more on the farcical the further the film goes on. So, you know, you've got my favourite scene in the whole movie is where he's dressed up in that filthy Santa outfit and he's just,
and he's
stuffing
just putting all the food.
He's stuffing the food in. And then after his plan goes wrong, he's just there sitting on the bus and just pulls out that huge chunk of meat.
And just starts isn't it a fish?
Oh yeah, no, it's salmon, isn't it? Yeah, he pulls salmon. Out that salmon and he's just eating it, getting his beard stuck in the fish as he's eating it.
It's really grotesque.
It's incredibly grotesque. It's really horrible. And it's just, it almost gives you that tactile feel almost to the scene.
Yeah, it's a film that really engages the senses.
Yes, yeah, which is so rare to do and so skillfully done. That scene always stands out for me, which I guess is part of the reason why it feels so good as a Christmas movie. There's those little pockets. So overall, you know, Christmas doesn't, apart from it being set around Christmas time, it doesn't really stand out as being a Christmas film, but it's those little snippets and pockets of, you know, New Year's Eve, Christmas, where it really sets the scene and lets you know where it's set.
And also, it's a joyful film about redemption and about seeing the best in people, which are all, you know, Christmas themes. And if it happens to be a film that you watch around Christmas time, that is a Christmas film to you, right? Everyone has their Christmas films.
Yeah, exactly. And there's lots of movies that have become Christmas classics that aren't necessarily Christmassy. So, you know, like The Great Escape, for instance.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about that before, didn't we?
Yeah.
I mentioned The Brave Little Toaster, which is just brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. So there's all these different... All these different movies that help set that feel of Christmas, and this does it incredibly well too.
Yeah, but I think it could also work as a post-Christmas film for, you know, the gooch of the festive season, where you're in that bit between Christmas and New Year, and you're like, what am I going to watch now? I'm still off work. If you're lucky enough to still be off work, I've got all these pigs in blankets lying around. I've got a tub of celebrations that's mostly bounties, but there's still a few of the good ones left. You know, what am I going to watch now? It'd be good for that kind of thing as well.
See, I am one of those people that brings balance to the celebrations.
The Force.
I bring balance to the Force. No, I bring balance to the celebrations thing because I like a good bounty.
Oh, Jesus. I don't know if that's balance so much as just outright lunacy.
Well, yeah.
You're definitely a Sith.
Otherwise, it's wastage, isn't it? You need
Our friend Sam and Rosie came up this weekend, and I think one of them likes bounties. So before they left, I took all the bounties out of our bag, our box of celebrations, and put them in one of the little gift bags that we have, and wrapped it up and gave it to them, and said Merry Christmas.
Oh, there we go.
So that's what you need to do. You need to find the one insane person that you know who likes bounties, or in my case, I've got two, and wrap them up and give them to them.
Oh, very nice.
With a note saying "I love you," I meant it.
Oh. Yeah, I love a good bounty. I don't really like the big bounty bars as much, though. Do you feel as though celebrations are better than regular sized chocolate bars?
Somehow, yes, and I don't even know what it is. It's definitely like a trick, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's definitely a false economy. But the little Milky Way ones, oh, just one perfect bite. There's some mad science around it, isn't there?
It must be some kind of ratio of mouth to chocolate to nougat or something like that.
The golden ratio.
Yeah, the golden ratio.
The chocolate ratio.
Am I going to get ratioed for my love of bounties? That's the question.
Yes, you are.
But yeah.
That's like, the coconut ratio.
The coconut. Yeah, and I think that's why those smaller bounties taste good, because there's that higher chocolate to coconut ratio. Because you've got chocolate on all sides, rather than if you're eating a bounty, you take a bite, there's always a coconut side to a bounty bite.
That's true, actually. Whatever the filling is, it's reduced to an appropriately stomachable amount. Like, I wouldn't usually go for a Snickers, but the small Snickers is just fine.
Yeah, because I feel as though Snickers, when you eat a full-size one, you get too much caramel. So the caramel and the nut get sort of too overpowering of the rest of the chocolate bar, and it becomes too sickly. Whereas when you've got the little ones are great.
For sure. I don't mind them. I always, they're not high up on my list. They're not the first ones I go for. But if I happen to pick one out, I'm like, all right.
What's your number one?
Milky Way, and then Maltesers.
See, the Maltesers are good. The Milky Ways are fine. They're not my favourite. I do like the little mini Twixes as well. I think Twix is an underrated biscuit.
Those chocolate. Were a good addition. They didn't used to have them, did they? Did they replace something else?
Whatever it was, it's been lost to the memory.
Yep. It's gone now.
Replaced by Twix.
Yeah. All no point in grieving. I, for one, welcome our new Twix overlords.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So Trading Places is set in Philadelphia as well, which is good because there aren't... You'd maybe expect this kind of film to be set in New York. And like, it's not like it's a big deal that it's in Philadelphia, but it is nice in the title sequence, which has brilliant thumping classical music. A bit of Mozart, can't go wrong with that. And it kind of, and that, the Mozart's Marriage of Figaro follows it through the film as well in a really, really nice way that, again, lends it a sort of air of false seriousness that I really like. And it's the same with Animal House as well. We should talk about Animal House at some point. You seen Animal House?
I love Animal House.
So good.
Yeah, I'd love to watch that sometime. Is well, there any
John Landis as well, it? Right? Yeah. There's loads of people getting off with each other.
Yeah, but is it romance?
Well, there's a thing with Boone and what's her name, isn't there? They have, there's a proper thing there.
Maybe. Well, I'll have to rewatch it and then we can decide.
Well, there's more romance in that than there is in Trading Places, I would say.
But is that true, though? There's more lust in Animal House. But is there
there's a lot of John Belushi raising his eyebrows at a pair of buttocks.
that's 90% of the runtime.
Yeah.
That and Louie playing on a loop in the background.
Louie. And then the rest is the principal walking in and saying, "Quiet, boy, or you'll be out of here like shit through a goose."
As much as I love Animal House, I think I love the spoof of it in Futurama even more with Robot House. Do you remember that
episode? I don't know if I've seen that one.
So they go to Mars University and they all enroll. And Bender's goes to his old alma mater there and finds that they're all nerds. And he decides to take them under his wing. And they basically just do Animal House apart from its robots. And it's Robot House. So it's even,
sounds great.
It's got a snooty dean shouting, "Robot House!" It's amazing.
Do they go on double secret probation?
Triple secret probation, yeah. it's amazing. It's really good.
Brilliant. And that's an earlier work of John Landis, and I think you can see the sensibility of that in Trading Places, can't you? Even though Trading Places, I think, actually aims a lot higher, because it does have a certain moral fibre to it, if that's the right phrase.
It does, it does. There's a definite right and wrong in this movie. And there's definite morals that it's trying to put forward, which is mainly don't be a greedy bastard who's evil. But
you will lose everything.
it's still all wrapped in that irreverent comedy that allows someone to get sexually assaulted by a gorilla. It's just one example.
It's a bit of a nasty scene.
Which is a very
Don't really show it, but the implication is there.
The implication is very horrible. Which doesn't necessarily fly that well these days. A bit like the joke in The Simpsons where he gets sexually assaulted by a panda.
It's
a bit like, oh, that's a bit dodge. I'm not too sure about that. Aged worse than when Homer Simpson's singing a Gary Glitter song. I think.
Oh, God. I didn't
know
about
that. Do you remember that he's singing? I can't remember what song it is, but yeah, it's a Gary Glitter
song. Is it Rock and Roll Christmas?
Unfortunately not. Which is...
I heard that in a shop the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in amongst all the other Christmas songs. I was thinking, hang on, guys, how did this one get in there?
Well, I suppose if places are still going to play Michael Jackson songs and have been playing Michael Jackson songs for the last 15 to 20 years, you can probably get away with playing Gary Glitter now. It's not as though he's going to get any of the royalties, is he?
I don't know. What happens to your royalties when you go to prison in Vietnam?
Well, that's a very good question. I think they go to Animal House, don't they?
Yeah, definitely.
They go to National Lampoon's Animal House.
That's where they get their money from.
Yeah, exactly. I imagine that he doesn't see any of it. So go and listen. You can probably listen to Gary Glitter.
So if you want to listen to Rock and Roll Christmas... We're not judging you.
Yeah, you're probably not.
Except
that
we kind of are, but...
We are kind of judging you, but...
That was on... you know, when you're growing up, you have that one Christmas compilation CD that you always used to put on. That was on our one of that we had. It was about track 7, track 8.
Yeah, it was always on ours as well. But yeah, he probably wouldn't get the money.
No.
He's probably never going to get out, is he? So...
No. Absolutely not.
So, yeah, we will judge you. Don't get us wrong. We will be judging you, and we'll know. We will know if you listen to Gary Glitter. We've got a little alarm in the big boys' offices.
There's an app for that.
It's a genuine physical alarm on the wall.
And yeah, you know, we're sitting here right now, and we've got the on-air button on in our very fancy studio.
Yeah.
Next to that is the Gary Glitter alarm.
It's a glitter alarm. And every so often you just get a brah, brah, brah that comes off it. And we go over to the computer. And it's one of those old computers that does a printout. And we get a little printout that gives us the location and name of the people who are listening to Gary Glitter songs. And
like a fax.
And it's like, oh, George Mason from Dumbartonshire.
It just gives us the longitude and the latitude.
Yeah. Like, mate, you fucked it. You listen to Gary Glitter.
Yeah.
What you're playing at. And then we put you down in our database, put a little note next to you.
Yeah. And then we send you some coal.
Yeah, we send you some coal at Christmas time. But that's all that will happen to you.
Yeah, just a bit of coal.
Bit of coal and the knowledge in your head that you're forever hated by us.
Yeah.
Can you live with that?
I think if I received some coal for Christmas, right, the symbolism of it would freak me out more than the object itself, right?
Yeah, coal.
Have I been bad? Am I a bad person?
Am I a bad person?
Are we the baddies?
Yeah, are we the baddies? So it's true, isn't it? Is coal... For us, coal was really almost an archaic form of heating, wasn't it? So I know that our next door neighbour had a coal fire.
Really?
But we were, you know, just gas radiators.
Yeah.
Or like a log fire, not a coal one. So instead, like for our generation and onwards, coal has always had this symbolism of being naughty at Christmas time.
Yeah. It's not about coal mining or anything. That's a thing of the past.
Yeah, so yeah, it's interesting, the negative connotations of coal.
Yeah. You ever tried coal?
Disgusting.
Just bitten into a piece?
It's revolting. Yeah. You're trying grate a bit on your dinner, makes everything taste bad, ruins your grater.
Although, you know, there is this trend now for like charcoal blackened croissants or whatever.
Yeah, But someone just burned them under an oven, yeah, didn't they?
Looks so nasty. Like, why would you buy that?
Just like, oh, damn it, we burn it quickly. Some of them, they're blackened.
Quick, mark it up.
It'll all be okay. It'll be okay. If we all believe the lie strong enough, we'll be fine. I've used charcoal toothpaste before, which is very scary because you spit out basically black toothpaste gunk.
Charcoal toothpaste.
It was very disconcerting.
Why?
I don't know. It was something brought back from my other half's work that they were trialing.
Right, okay.
And so they had this free sample and they're like, oh, go and try this. And it's like, well, tastes fine. It tastes like regular minty toothpaste. But you spit out black. Which made me feel very goth. It made me feel like Marilyn Manson.
That seems like the kind of thing you'd enjoy.
Which I did love. I was just there being like, oh, look at me. I'm great. It's all relative to the gleam of your teeth.
Nice.
But Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, Trading Places is just great. It's a really great
Marilyn
film.
Manson.
No, sorry, talk about Marilyn Manson, please.
I mean, I know we've got a movie to talk about.
But, Brian Warner.
But quick note, I like Marilyn Manson. I think he's cool. And it's one of those things where people say, if you had a time machine, who would you go back and see live? And obviously you've got sort of like, oh yeah, you go back and see Hendrix. For me, I'd go and see King Crimson in their original lineup for the first album. That would be amazing. But also I'd go back to see Marilyn Manson at his peak.
I saw him at the Reading Festival.
Oh, okay.
2004, 2005.
So a little bit after his peak, but still pretty much prime Manson territory.
Pretty prime Manson, yeah. I'd say. And he was awesome. He was so good. I think he was on before Iron Maiden or someone. I honestly can't remember, but he was incredible. He was absolutely amazing.
Like, I'd love to go and see him. When he had all of like the people on stilts in the background, all of the horrible gothic imagery.
There was as much of that as you could get into a festival slot.
Which is really what I'd love to see. So yeah, I would go back and see him, you know, maybe like Antichrist Superstar Tour. I think that would be really cool seeing him around then. Which would be great. I'd do that. That would be awesome. But yeah, who would you see? If you had a time machine, who would you go back to?
I don't know. I would actually, as long as we're talking about him, I would quite like to go back and see Eddie Murphy do stand-up in the 80s.
Oh, okay.
Because a lot of his specials you can watch now, and as you say, some of the content, it really doesn't hold up and is offensive, but he just had this electric presence and he was really, really funny. And I would have loved to have seen that because it really felt like a moment.
Yeah, there was some very bad content that he had.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be interesting, actually. I'm not sure if there's any comedians I'd see.
And Bill Hicks, I'd like to see.
Bill Hicks would be interesting. I'd go and watch Jeff Buckley. And
Prince. Prince, obviously. I think that's my number one, actually, because I never saw Prince. And see him on the Purple Rain tour, that would have been just out of this world.
Yeah, that would have been really good. I'd see Pink Floyd in their peak. Jeff Buckley, I think. Nirvana.
Oh, yeah.
Guns N' Roses in like a dingy venue, like a dingy, shitty 1,000-person venue would be amazing as well.
No, I think you want to see Guns N' Roses when like Appetite for Destruction has just come out, but it's the tour that they've booked before the album hits its peak. So it's before they start doing stadiums and stuff. But all the songs are there. The presence is there. They know they're on the up. That's the time you want to see Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, that would be amazing. Oh, man. That would be so good.
We could do this all day.
Should we set up a new podcast for bands? Yeah. The Hot Tub Time Machine of Music.
That's a film I would
watch. Jukebox Time Machine, the new Paddy and Rob podcast.
Jukebox Time Machine.
Yeah.
I bet there's like, if you were someone as influential and conservative as Richard Curtis, you could pay the music industry to do that film.
You probably could actually.
Or they'd probably pay you. Yeah. Like he got to do a Beatles film with all the songs in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which apparently isn't great.
The trailers made me want to curl up in a ball and die.
Oh, that's a film we should look at then.
Yeah, I'm game if you are. It looks absolutely.
For sure.
I heard good things about it, but it looked absolutely terrible to me. But yeah, I'm game if you are. Let's watch it.
Yeah.
But you know what didn't make me crawl up into a ball and die is Trading Places. I like this film.
Yeah.
Just try and get it back on track. Just really.
This is a great film. And I hadn't seen it for a long time, actually. But now I feel like this could be in my regular Christmas and New Year film rotation.
Oh, that's
sure.
Cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't know if I'd put it into like a yearly watch list or whether I just revisit it every so often. But it's really nice.
I'll get back to you about it this time next year.
Yes. Yeah. Whereas
it's good. I think all the performances are good. There's nobody who lets the side down.
No, everyone's really great in it. Very, very competent, very funny. It does rain at points, which I don't believe because I've been told that it's always sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's just the hilarious thing where, the dog pees on his foot. He's in the Santa suit. He's obviously got all this food. He's homeless. He's down in his luck. A dog's just peed on his foot and now it's raining.
What's great as well is that dog actually looks like Poppins from It's Always Sunny.
He does, yeah.
Can we get a crossover? Hey, Always Sunny guys.
We know you're listening.
We know you're listening. Do you want to do a crossover with Trading Places?
That would actually be awesome.
Get on it. Get on it.
I could see them doing an episode based on that if they haven't
already.
Yeah,
they could definitely do a subversive take on it at some point, which would be very funny. Like one of my favorite episodes is the one where they do Flowers for Algernon.
Oh, yeah.
So well done. It's so funny. But it's a good film. It's a really good film, and it's kind
and
of
you got Clarence Beeks is the kind of the shadowy agent who's the Dukes have employed to make all this happen. And he's the angry principal from the Breakfast Club.
Oh, amazing. Yeah.
He's the one who's going to crack some skulls.
Sorry.
He's
I was going to say that he's great.
You're yawning at the idea of cracking skulls.
No, I was yawning.
He's going to come over there and crack your skull.
He is going to come get me. I'm scared now.
He was surprisingly young in this film, but still very good.
Yeah. But everyone does good, and it is that movie that appears before everyone gets known for their bigger role. So I mean, we'd already had Blues Brothers by this point,
yeah.
But Ghostbusters was the year after, and you know that was a real huge success for Aykroyd, and then as we said, Eddie Murphy went on to do Beverly Hills Cop and everything like that, but I feel like this movie is just as good as some of those movies that came after it. Certainly better than
absolutely.
Some of the dodgier things that people have been in.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a high point in Eddie Murphy's catalogue, for sure.
Yeah, I'd put this up there with Murphy's Best.
For sure.
Yeah, you know, you compare it to some of the Nutty Professor movies, for instance. This is
the first one's not terrible.
No, it's not awful, but after that
it's just about watchable, probably. Yeah. Well, I say that I haven't seen it for a long time.
I imagine in my head I kind of think of that as a parallel to Flubber. Do you remember Flubber?
Yeah,
where it's another,
which is a bit stupid but not awful.
Yeah, another zany professor type, zany scientist played by a renowned comedic star doing silly things, and you're like, you could be doing more with your time.
Yeah, you don't need this.
No. But in Aykroyd news, have you seen the trailer for the new Ghostbusters?
I have not, no.
It's got people in it.
It's got people in it, people you know.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've got the original cast members who are still alive are coming back.
Oh, right. But it's like a sequel.
Yeah, so...
With them all being old.
So it's a sequel, but then I think the main people in it are youngsters. So we've got Finn Wolfhard.
The hardest working child in showbiz.
Yep, exactly. We've got McKenna Grace, so you know Gifted, that we watched.
Oh, yeah.
She's the girl in that. But then also Paul Rudd as like the teacher type person when all these kids when all these kids are gallivanting around being Ghostbusters. But then so you've got Aykroyd back, you've got Sigourney Weaver back, you've got Bill Murray back, you've got Ernie Hudson back. So it'll be interesting to see how good it is.
I'm open to it.
Yeah, it's directed by Jason Reitman.
Cool.
Who's did Juno, for instance.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of ignoring the female remake of Ghostbusters that came out a few years ago.
Which is a shame.
Yeah, because that was... Yeah, I wouldn't say it was a good film, but I feel like the reaction to it was far worse than the movie itself.
Yeah, very stupid. It's Ghostbusters, guys. Come on. Not like it's Star Wars.
Speaking of...
No, that's next week.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to say anything.
I have things to say.
Spoiler alert, we're doing Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker next week.
Yeah, we're doing Star Wars. I have things to say. I don't know what your opinion is on it, Paddy. You have kept deceptively quiet about it. So I'm very interested to learn what your thoughts were of this film, whereas I have not been as quiet in how I feel about that film. So it's gonna be an exciting one. But do you have anything else to say about Trading Places?
All the small roles are very, very good as well. Jim Belushi as the
Gorilla Man.
Yeah, which is great. He's just really drunk and belligerent, but in a funny way.
He's very funny in that very small role.
Yeah. Frank Oz as a police officer and Bo Diddley as a pawnbroker.
Yes. Did you notice that? Yeah, that was great.
Really random, but why not?
Yeah, exactly. But it's those neat little roles, isn't it?
Yeah. I'll tell you another bit that absolutely cracked me up is when it just suddenly cuts to like all of Dan Aykroyd's like Harvard buddies, and they're singing a random like a cappella song that they've obviously made up about the women that they're with, and it's just so stupid. But you think that that's exactly the kind of thing that those kind of people do.
Yes.
And it's just spot on.
Yeah, it's
like there's no scene where you're like, this isn't funny, this adds nothing to the story, this moves on. Like, I'd say this is actually a really good film to look at for like writing as well. It's really well written and well paced, and it all comes together really well, and everything is part of the story and part of the fabric of the film.
Yeah, even those sillier moments, they all feed in incredibly well, don't they?
Yeah,
it all works incredibly well together. So yeah, it's such a neat film.
Yeah, neat is the right word.
Well put together.
It's neat and kind of low-key but consistently funny. Great performances all round. Holds up well for the time that it's from. Doesn't seem overly dated apart from one or two bits. Yeah, it's good.
So yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one.
And I always like when they have loud, like thumping classical music over the title sequence. That always hooks me in.
Yeah.
Over like urban scenes.
Yeah, that hated Black Swan. Which probably did that.
I said thumping. I didn't say apocalyptically crashing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's good. It's good, this film. Go watch it.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good film, I think, as well, to round off the year.
Yeah, it is. It fits that, like you said, it fits that perfect time between Christmas and New Year very well.
Yep. And is a Christmas film, a good Christmas film.
Yes.
So yeah, sorry that we didn't do New Year's Eve again, but
There's always next year.
There's always next year.
Yeah. Or never again, either way.
Either's fine by me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One's very good by me.
Yep. I know you always want to watch it again, because you love The Effrenator.
I do love that film so much.
Yeah. You got the poster on your wall.
I do, just of Zac Efron in this movie.
Yep. All right, how are we going to rate this?
Oh, that's a good question. How many millions would you wager on frozen orange juice?
Frozen orange juice futures. Yeah, the commodities and stuff. But so, like, actually in the opening scene where they're in the back of the car with the highly advanced technology trading pork bellies. That made me chuckle. It's just all that kind of thing is set up. It's all like everything in the background is funny as well. It's just,
That's
good.
It is good.
I would waste 17 millions.
And I would go just one lower at 16. It's a very funny film.
Yeah, that's great. Well paced, good length, good to look at. Lots of very good cuts as well from scene to scene. Yeah. It's a very enjoyable comedy that is well worth your time.
Yes, definitely so.
Nice. Well, we've already said what we're going to do next, haven't we?
We have, yeah. So we've got Star Wars.
Yeah, we've seen the Star War.
Yeah, the war in the stars. The last war in the stars.
The War in Our Stars. That was one of those teen cancer books.
It was.
Yeah. We already did our kind of Star Wars special, didn't we, back when we talked about Attack of the Clones, but this is about a new Star Wars film. It's exciting.
Yes,
It does have a romantic moment in it.
It does. But also we've got to get in on the zeitgeist, and since I can't convince you to go and watch Cats just yet...
Well, I'm open to it.
I'm open to it.
Are you going to see it?
I am currently doing my best Iago in trying to capture someone into going to see it with me.
The parrot from The Lion King?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. Aladdin.
Aladdin. Sorry. Aladdin.
I'm going to get ratioed by Disney fans.
They're going to have...
By my own family.
Bounty haters coming after me. Disney fans coming after you.
Bounty haters, not bounty hunters.
No. No Mandalorians, unfortunately. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be interesting.
Definitely.
Yeah, cool. Well, in that case, unless you have anything else you want to talk about, I think that's it. Another year.
Yeah, just Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you all.
Yeah, so we're recording this before Christmas. By the time you hear it,
it'll be
Christmas will have already happened. Be in the gooch. So enjoy it. Put your feet up. Watch some films. Watch Trading Places. Watch some other films about redemption and stuff, you know?
Yes, yeah. Get on it.
Get on it. Enjoy yourself. You're good. You're a good person. Unless we sent you coal, in which case you're not.
Yeah, in which case you're not. Get out.
Yeah. Get out of it. But thank you so much for tuning in. Obviously, we really, really do appreciate it. Christmas is a time to be thankful. And we're very thankful to all of you for the gift of your listenership.
Yes, thank you, everybody. You are great.
And we hope that New Year brings you all the joy and happiness in the world.
Yes.
Especially through film.
Indeed.
I mean, can it get worse than Cats in 2020? That's the question.
That is the big question, isn't it?
We'll ask that question when we've seen it.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope we continually get worse and more bizarre movies forevermore. Yep.
I think filmmakers, your aim for 2020 is to try and top Cats.
Yeah, get on it, guys. You can do it. We believe in you.
And that's nothing to do with Top Cat, who lived in a bin.
You need to make a movie that is too bad to go in the bin. That's your...
Yeah. The regular bin is too good for this film, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Actually, that one you sent me, that's like a conservative Christian Christmas movie, that looks too bad for the bin.
It does.
It could be our new section, too bad for the bin.
Too bad for the
bin. What's it called? A patriot, God-fearing, gun-loving Christmas.
Yep, that's right.
Yep. Anyway, I'll find what that film is and pop it in the show notes.
Yes, check it in.
Yep. And we will be back next week to talk about Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, yes, indeedy.
All right. Bye-bye and Happy bye-bye. New Year.
Happy New
Merry,
Year.
Merry New Year.
Hey, jingety-jing, it's Dominic the Donkey. Jingety-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La, 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 la.